The ground around the muddy pothole yielded nothing but Hunter's boot marks. Near Remo and Chun, water seeped up into a fresh survivor sole imprint. A crushed Budweiser can lay next to it.
Damn it, why don't these rummies take their clog dance and chorus line to the nearest bar?
Remo had grown more irritated as their search wore on. As they turned from the puddle, Remo rubbed his shoulder absently. It was a habit he'd developed after the attack, and one that caused him irritation whenever he caught himself doing it. When he suddenly realized he was rubbing his shoulder yet again, he pulled his hand away, dropping it abruptly to his side. A few yards away, four hunters sloshed through a puddle. They ducked inside an old boiler room that was attached to one of the bigger buildings. Remo stopped dead.
This is ridiculous. Where are the cops? They should be rounding these rumhounds into paddy wagons.
Beside him, the Master of Shinanju cocked a sudden ear.
Silence!
The Master of Shinanju's head was tipped to one side. He seemed to be listening intently. Remo trained an ear in the same direction. It took him a moment to filter out all the extraneous sounds, but once he'd cleared everything else away, he heard it too. The glance they exchanged was swift and knowing. Their feet did not disturb a single particle of dirt, so swiftly did they move. Without a word, the two men flew off in the direction of the terrifying sound. Trooper Dan McGuire couldn't believe what he'd just been told. There was no backup coming. Eyewitnesses had confirmed the initial reports. Killer scientist Dr. Judith White, who had murdered a fellow Massachusetts State Trooper no less, was suspected to be at large in this very area. And there were no other police units being sent in. The place should have been swarming with cops by now. But the only people here were civilians. Even news people were being kept out of the area. Although some police had been deployed to Chelsea, it had been to cordon off the area. They were sitting this one out. This lunacy was all because of some crazy, mysterious order out of Washington. No one even seemed to know where the command had originated. And while the brass tried to figure out what the hell was going on up the chain of command, Dan McGuire was left hanging. A lone sitting duck for the deranged, gene-sucking tiger woman of Boston Bio. Well, not entirely alone. There was also the skinny guy from the Department of Agriculture and his 2,000-year-old assistant. If push came to shove, they'd be a big help. His negative opinion of the two agriculture men wasn't altered by their sudden appearance around the side of the warehouse across the street from McGuire's unmarked car. The trooper had been sitting in his sedan, door open, black-booted feet planted on the road. He rose from the vehicle when he saw the two men appear. They came at him much faster than men should have been able to travel on foot. They were both flying along as if Dr. White were hot on their heels. McGuire quickly pulled his sidearm as they approached, half expecting to see a loping Judith White racing in for the kill behind them. Remo and Chun flew out of the parking lot and across the street, racing up to the parked state police car. McGuire had his gun leveled at a point behind them, but there was nothing there.
Where is she?
The trooper's gun swept left, then right. Still nothing visible.
Where'd that scream come from?
Remo's alert eyes raked the immediate area.
Scream? What scream?
Remo ignored McGuire and looked at Chun.
It was over here somewhere.
What scream?
There.
Chun pointed to a large warehouse.
Could be that one.
Yes, but this one is closer.
Dan McGuire's head bounced back and forth between each man as they spoke.
Somebody screamed?
Okay, big one first. You take the front, I'll take the back.
Chun hesitated a fraction of a second. Given what had happened during his pupil's first encounter with Judith White, he didn't want to abandon Remo now. Remo sensed his teacher's unease.
Look, I'll be fine, Chun, really.
The hesitation passed. Nodding, the Master of Shinanju set his frail shoulders firmly.
Remember, my son, man holds dominion over all beasts. You are far greater than any mere man. You are Shinanju.
I'll do you proud, little father.
Aim for an attainable goal. I will be satisfied if you do not get yourself killed.
With a sharp nod, they separated, each tearing off to an opposite end of the warehouse. Trooper McGuire could only stand by his car and watch as the two men flew away from him at impossible speed. Not a single puff of dust rose in their wake.
Who screamed?
She had to work quickly. Judith White gathered up a few more test tubes from the one case she'd carried to the warehouse. She slipped them into the front pockets of her slacks, careful to keep the old-fashioned corks in place. There wasn't a lot of the formula to go around, and what she had was inferior to the solution she'd used on herself. This was only the original mixture, a poor substitute for her refined blend. But while it didn't have the same long-lasting effects as the formula she'd taken, it would be good enough. She had almost dumped the older stuff out after her breakthrough with the newer formula. Lucky for her, she hadn't. Right now, she was glad to have it. Bent low at the waist, she ran through the empty rooms at the back of the warehouse. Light streamed in through the dust-smeared windows, filtering down through the thick canopy of green turning to orange autumn leaves. The woods that grew up around the small tributary that fed into the larger Chelsea Creek had been her refuge for much of the time during her change. It was through them that she'd carried the many bodies buried in the basement. As with all animals, the jungle had a powerful draw on Judith White. It was a haven. The thick cover meant safety. But there were things to do first. She needed to create more like her, needed to give herself more of an edge. Though her heart pounded madly, it was no longer from fear. It was the thrill of action that impelled her. Judith leaped over a few old crates, landing softly in the interior of an old office. A footfall sounded through the thin wall to her left. A branch cracked beneath the tread. Someone was coming through the woods. Another victim. The window in the office was partially open. Judith White hopped lightly to the sill. Careful not to break the glass tubes in her pockets, she eased herself to the moist ground outside. The figure she saw creeping through the woods surprised her. He was familiar. She'd watched him arrive from her rafter in the attic. He was oblivious to her presence. Too easy. Slipping one of the vials from her pocket, she palmed it. On confident, gliding paws, she stole quickly up on the newest, unsuspecting member of her superior species. The master of Shinanju had waited long enough for Remo to reach the rear of the building. He was stretching one hand to the door of the warehouse when he saw a flash of movement in the woods at the back of the neighboring building. It was a fleeting glimpse, but it was enough. Whoever it was moved much faster than a normal human being. So quickly, in fact, Chun's well-trained eyes almost didn't detect the motion. The figure had darted out of sight in an instant. He paused, considering for a moment if he should not go back and collect Remo. This whole affair had been a strain on his pupil. The attack by Judith White would not ordinarily have been enough in isolation to cause Remo concern. But Chun knew that he had dredged up long-buried memories of his last encounter with one of these tiger creatures. Remo's old fears could blind him to the current problem. A single distraction at the wrong moment could prove fatal. And something else had apparently not occurred to Remo during this time of crisis. For years, Chun had tried to convince Remo that he was the fulfillment of a prophecy that asserted that a master of Shinanju would one day train the avatar of Shiva, the Hindu god of destruction. This dead night tiger would be brought to fullness in Shinanju. To Chun, Remo was fulfillment of the legend. However, for most of their association, Remo, in his typical white, Western, lunk-headed way, had deemed the legend a big, fat, smelly load of doohickey. Nonetheless, Chun persisted. Certain factors in recent years had caused Remo to argue less strenuously against the prophecy. In a very small way, he had allowed the glimmer of a possibility that the legend might actually be true. It was a step in the right direction, as well as a step to fulfilling the legend. But there was another aspect to the ancient story. As the dead night tiger trained in Shinanju, it was said that Shiva could only be sent to death again by his own kind.
Shiva must walk with care when he passes the jungle where lurk the other night tigers.
Chun had intoned these words to Remo years before when first they had encountered the tiger creatures. Hand in hand with the Shiva prophecy, it was one of the most ancient legends of the House of Shinanju. Perhaps Remo had thought of this and hadn't mentioned it for fear of worrying Chun. However, given Remo's monkey-like attention span, it was more likely he hadn't been paying attention when the Master of Shinanju was relating the tale. To someone who knew the truth of the legends, Chun alone appreciated the danger his pupil now faced. Poised to enter the dusty old warehouse, Chun thought of all these things in a fraction of a millisecond. The decision was made in an instant. Remo's life was too important to risk. The legend did not affect Chun, and the master of Shinanju didn't carry the same emotional baggage as his pupil. Chun would deal with Judith White on his own. Spinning abruptly, the old Asian left the front of the first warehouse. Kimono skirts billowing, he raced across the barren space to the next building. Remo crept stealthily through the thick underbrush at the rear of the first warehouse. As he stepped carefully over the moss-slick stones that lined the trickling brook behind the building, he scanned the high wall, looking for the best route of entry. There were high windows all along the back. A lot had been broken, but not as many as at the front. Vandals didn't have as easy a time getting back here, and so left the rear largely untouched. Graffiti artists had decorated the brick foundation, as well as the clapboards that encased what appeared to be the old office wing. Remo wasn't surprised to find that the sprayed words were illegible. In a state where most teachers spent half the year filing phony grievances and the other half complaining about the latest basic competency test they'd all just failed, simple things like teaching spelling and penmanship had a tendency to get lost in the classroom shuffle. A few yards along the rear wall, Remo found an open door set into the foundation. It was coated with moss and propped against a jagged rock. As he approached the doorway, Remo's heart skipped a beat. Tracks in the mud. Hundreds of them. They were identical to those he'd seen in the cornfield back in Concord. Judith White had apparently been using the rear warehouse door to come and go unseen. For months, if the dried prints at the edge of the muddy path were any indication. The path she regularly took carried her out into the center of the stream. Judith was evidently trying to mask her scent in the water, a distinctly human act. Remo glanced into the dark interior of the warehouse. The ground angled down along the rear of the structure. This was the basement. Chun would be entering on the first floor level. For a moment, Remo contemplated going back for Chun. The master of Shinanju expected to meet up with Remo on the ground floor, not the basement. And Remo had no great desire to stumble on Judith on his own. And in that instant of hesitation, Remo was ashamed of his own apprehension. No. To go back for Chun now would be a surrender to fear. Not only that, but he would also be abandoning Judith White's probable escape route. Remo steeled himself.
I am not cleaning out her litter box.
Without a backward glance, he plunged into the darkness. And the figure that had been trailing him stealthily along the rear of the building followed swiftly behind. Chun didn't see Judith White anywhere. The woods near the small stream were overgrown, making visibility poor. Surely his eyes had not deceived him. She was here, somewhere. The figure he had seen moved with the grace and speed of a big cat. It had slipped into the late afternoon shadows somewhere nearby. A filthy mattress lay on the ground in a small clearing near the brook. Around it, shattered beer bottles mixed with rotting leaves from years gone by. Chun stepped past these, glancing first to woods, then to building. And in that sliver of time, when his eyes were trained on the warehouse, a figure emerged from out of the thicket. So soft were his footfalls, Chun hadn't heard him moving in the woods. He wheeled on the sudden sound. When he spied Trooper Dan McGuire, the old man's alert features relaxed to annoyance.
Why are you not at your carriage?
You said someone screamed. I can't let that psycho doctor escape with or without backup.
Chun looked at the trooper's gun, gripped firmly in a black leather glove.
Put that noisemaker away.
Sorry, Pops. You do what you want, but I'm not getting killed.
The Magyars were grasping, but at least they had sense to guard their coaches from bands of roving drunkards.
Cruiser gets trashed, they give me another one.
Chun had no time to deal with foolish taxi drivers. Frowning, the master of Shinanju turned away from the trooper. Judith White could only have come this way, Chun reasoned, but a rapid scan revealed no doors on the rear of the building. The only windows were too high for her to reach. That left the woods. But as he listened, he heard no sounds coming from the nearby copse of trees. As he contemplated this riddle, Chun was distracted by the soft sound of the Massachusetts State Trooper gliding in behind him. McGuire moved gracefully, almost as effortlessly as Chun himself. It was strange for a man as beefy as Maguire to be so light on his feet. It was almost as if... And in a flash, Chun finally understood.
Oh, damn.
The rear door led into a dank corridor. The wet concrete walls were covered with moss. The floor was earthen, packed firmly into a level path. Even so, the paw prints of Judith White were clear to Remo as he walked carefully into the bowels of the warehouse. Remo's eyes pulled in ambient light, enough so that the dark corridor appeared as bright as midday. The corridor broke into a vast interior chamber, so wide it seemed to encompass most of the area beneath the main warehouse. Wooden columns, spaced evenly throughout the cellar, kept the ceiling from collapsing. As he stepped inside, Remo saw that a good-sized chunk of the first floor had crashed into the basement. Recently, judging by the level of disturbed dust that was swirling through the fetid air, he caught the stench of rotting human flesh the moment he walked into the large cellar room. A body was impaled on a board near the debris. Even from this distance, sharp eyes saw evidence of more corpses. A breeze pushed in from the long corridor behind him. It carried a hint of fresh air into the foul-smelling basement. The clean air made the smell in the cellar seem all the worse. As Remo stepped farther into the room, his senses detected something more in the cool wind on his back. A stronger pressure of air. Something pushing through the natural breeze. Something fast. And in that moment of realization, the thing became airborne. Ted had thrown himself at Remo's back with such ferocity that he flew several yards into the dank cellar. He dropped to all fours, springing to his feet the instant he'd landed. He wheeled around, snarling angrily. The hunter's face was smeared with dirt. His eyes were wide, staring blind hatred at Remo. Behind him, another creature dropped through the ceiling hole. Evan Cleaver skulked rapidly forward.
You were supposed to lead him over to me. He moved too fast.
Evan kept coming, moving out around Remo. He was trying to get their prey between them. Remo noted the effortless movements of the two tiger creatures. But though they had grace, they were not artful. It was all pure instinct with them. And in that moment, Remo knew that this was not like before. When Sheila Feinberg had created her army of tiger people years ago, Remo had been injured. His Shinanju abilities had already deserted him. He had stood helplessly by as Chun fought the battle that he could not join. But these creatures were nothing special. He saw that now. With their snarling and snapping, they were little more than wild beasts, certainly nothing to be feared. And as the dawning knowledge that all his worries had been for naught began to set firmly in, Remo Williams did something the beast before him did not expect.
What's so funny?
You, Snagglepuss. You're already dead, and you don't even know.
He's bluffing.
Evan was between Remo and the rear door, blocking escape. Remo felt the power that was his Shinanju training flood every corpuscle of his being. The pain in his shoulder had fled. He was alert, infinitely aware. Every movement they took, every soft pad that dropped to the floor, he heard. His senses were alive in Shinanju. Remo kept his arms away from his body, hands open. He watched Ted, but kept his body attuned to Evan, still moving behind him. He smiled.
Twy me, pussy cats.
And as one, the two tiger creatures plunged. Chun bounded back from the swinging paw. Maguire's hand swept viciously past, throwing a wild gust of air into the master of Shinanju's face.
You are in league with the fiend.
I am now. I just met Dr. White. Nice woman. Though much like her taste in beverages. But I think I found a chew toy to cleanse my palate.
Maguire sent another hand toward Chun, fingers curved in a move as old as the jungle itself. Splayed claws were meant to rip open the flesh of prey. But unfortunately for Trooper Maguire, Massachusetts did not yet allow its state troopers to grow claws. Chun snagged the hand as it swung toward him, arresting its motion. Bony fingers encircling the trooper's hand, he applied pressure with his own clenching fist. McGuire flung out his free hand. Chun's counter-movement was invisible to the beast before him, but its effect was obvious. McGuire was left staring dumbly at the bloody stump where his hand had been. The severed hand dropped to the bed of rotting leaves at his feet, fingers still curled in attack. Chun removed a single steely fingernail from the center of Trooper McGuire's forehead.
Good kitty.
McGuire had been changed since their arrival. Judith White was not only close by, but she also had a fast-working version of her formula. And Chun had allowed himself to be lured away from Remo. The old man left the state trooper to be reclaimed by the earth. Hands clenched in knots of furious ivory, the master of Shinanju raced from the rear of the crumbling warehouse. Remo ducked below the two springing hunters, rolling to the right. The two hunters had launched themselves headlong at him from opposite directions and were moving too quickly to arrest their forward momentum. They rolled back to their feet with surprising swiftness.
Ooh, did Cody get a bang on him head?
Asshole.
Hey, I don't remember Sylvester ever calling Tweety an asshole.
Beside him, Ted lunged forward, both hands clawing down at Remo's chest. Ted was fast. Remo was faster.
Do I look like a ball of yarn to you?
One forearm swept Ted's hands harmlessly away. With his arms no longer stretched out before him, Ted lost his balance. And in that split second, Remo launched a balled fist into his attacker's chest. Even as his partner fell, Evan sprang forward, teeth bared menacingly. There was no need to play with this one. The movements of these creatures weren't as graceful as Remo had thought. As Evan thrust his fangs toward Remo's neck, Remo realized he was facing nothing more than a poor, dumb animal whose behavior was programmed by twisted science. It wasn't Evan's fault he was what he was. Remo showed Evan the compassion that man alone of all the creatures on Earth could demonstrate to a lesser animal. As he flashed forward for the kill, Remo's flattened palm caught Evan just above his slavering fangs. Remo looked down upon the bodies. It was a victory without satisfaction. These men weren't to blame for what they'd become. The responsibility for all of this rested squarely on a single set of shoulders. Remo spun from the hunter's remains. Racing to the pile of collapsed debris, he scampered to the top. Flexing calf muscles propelled him out of the basement and onto the ground floor level. He ran to the source of the commotion. In his wake, silence flooded the macabre graveyard. The first floor of the warehouse split off in two separate wings. The main section was the large part of the building that faced the street. The other was a long addition that extended over the waters of Chelsea Creek at the rear of the property. The gunshots he'd heard came from the direction of the river, and so when he jumped up through the basement hole, Remo struck off into the narrower wing of the musty old building. He found a group of hunters hustling away from an alley-like loading dock tunnel. Beams had collapsed from the low roof. The men were forced to climb awkwardly as they hurried back toward Remo. There were six of them in all. Three trained their shotguns back on the door through which they'd just come. The other two bore one of their fellow hunters. The man they were carrying had a vicious chest wound. Blood seeped into the cloth of his gray shirt, staining it black.
What happened?
Darting eyes were terrified. Orange, late afternoon sun shone through dirty windows, illuminating faces shiny with frightened perspiration.
It was her!
Where?
The stairs! She jumped us before we could stop her! I think the shots might have scared her off!
The hunters hurried past him, hauling their bleeding friend. When they realized Remo wasn't with them, two of the men glanced back. They were just in time to see the old wooden stairway door sigh softly shut. Judith White mounted the stairs five at a time. Her heart thudded madly. It was the fear of a hunted animal. She was the mouse, cornered by the cat, a fox chased by hounds, a gazelle stalked by a lion. It was a horrible feeling, a complete loss of control, utter, utter helplessness and abandonment. She had seen Remo in the basement. Unbeknownst to him, she had watched through a crack in the baseboard on the far side of the cellar as he went up against her two sacrificial lambs. It hadn't been much of a fight. Ted was dispatched so quickly she hadn't even seen Remo move. Judith fled before he finished off Evan. She didn't need to stay. She knew what the eventual outcome would be. She hit the landing running, up the next flight, six steps at a time now. Faster, faster. Next landing, next flight. Judith had more of the original Tiger solution, but she now knew that it would do her no good. The old files of BGSBS stated very clearly that alcohol dulled or even killed the bacteria on which the new gene coding lived. Most of the men in the area had a blood alcohol level high enough to blind a herd of bull elephants. Judith had lucked out with the ones she did find. Ted Holstein had sobered up after her morning attack. Evan Cleaver appeared to have dried out a bit as well. Trooper McGuire had been unquestionably sober. The rest? Drunks. All drunks. Last landing. Judith pounced forward, slapping a palm against the creaky old door. She moved inside, quickly shutting the door behind her. Her attic room. High above her, the tired wooden beams on which she had spent many a night sleeping off her ghoulish feedings stretched toward the distant wall. Windows lined all but the wall directly behind her. To her left was the parking lot, to her right, woods. Judith raced toward the last set of windows. During more prosperous times, the long-dead business that had once occupied the warehouse had built a new wing out over Chelsea Creek. The four-story wood addition rested on huge pylons that had been constructed atop concrete platforms in the river far below. At the grimy windows, Judith looked down at the river. Overflow from a dam farther upstream made this area of the waterway treacherous. It was a long drop into swift-moving rapids. Judith spun from the window, looking desperately across the big empty attic. There was nowhere else she could go. She was trapped.
Some plan.
Footfalls on the stairs, light as air, inaudible to a common human. She might have missed them herself if she hadn't been specifically listening for them. Two fingers poked into her pocket and removed one of the slender tubes of Tiger Gene formula. Her plan was bleak, no matter how she looked at it. But perhaps there was another way. Wild-eyed, she waited for the door to open and for her new species' final reckoning. Remo sensed the movements coming from the attic room. From the way the animal carried itself, it was either Judith White or another of her tiger creatures. At the moment, the animal that lurked before him wasn't his primary concern. Remo had smelled the smoke before he'd even gotten to the staircase. The gunshots of the retreating hunters had drawn others. Huddled together in the parking lot far below, the men had apparently gotten the bright idea to smoke Judith White out. To this end, they'd set fire to the building. The wood was catching quickly, too fast for Remo's liking. The stairwell was already filling with black smoke by the time he reached the closed attic door. The first hints of flame at the bottom of the stairwell four stories below crackled into his peripheral vision as he pushed the old warped door open. Inside, he found nothing but four empty walls. Judith White was nowhere to be seen. Ever cautious, sensitive to the flames licking up below him, Remo stepped into the vast, airy room. In his wake, smoke wafted into the chamber.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Judith had been hiding on the rafter directly above him. Judith dropped, dead weight. Remo bent double, catching her falling bulk on the meaty part of his back. As her claws brushed the cotton cloth of his t-shirt, Remo flexed his back muscles and jerked left. Judith White flipped off his shoulders. Twisting, she landed solidly on both feet, facing Remo, her teeth bared viciously.
You heal quickly.
Good genes.
Better genes.
Judith dived at Remo again. Remo had prepared for her. He was ready to stop her forward momentum as he had with the hunters in the cellar. But as his hand flew out from his side, Judith White did something unexpected. At the last minute, she dropped low, beneath his rocketing fist. The command had been sent. Remo's hand was already locked into an unstoppable motion. It flew forward, but with nothing to contact, it struck only air. It was all he could do to keep his arm from tearing out of its socket. Remo lurched forward as the force of the missed blow knocked him off balance. Before Remo could regain his equilibrium, Judith sprang up at the inside of his outstretched arm. Both hands balled tightly. She shoved Remo's chest with a strength far greater than her slight form would have indicated. Judith leaped forward, collapsing on Remo's prone form. In her hand, Judith held a test tube filled with brown, brackish genetic formula. With a savage grin of victory, she tipped the thick liquid into Remo's open mouth. Chun spied the crowd of rowdy hunters the instant he broke from the wooded area behind the adjoining building. They surrounded the warehouse into which Remo had gone. Much of the ground floor was already engulfed in flame. Acrid smoke hung heavy in the afternoon air. Arms pumping furiously, he raced across the vast space that separated the two warehouses. By the time Chun had reached the building, the second story had already ignited. Flames were racing up to the third. Near the old loading dock, the hunters were enjoying a celebratory drink. Someone had retrieved a bottle of Jack Daniels from one of the trucks. They were trying to figure out how to pour the liquid into their open beer cans without spilling a drop when Chun raced up behind them.
Where is my son?
The voice startled them. Jumping, the hunter with the bottle splashed some whiskey on his hand.
Watch it, Grandpa.
Chun had neither time nor patience. Plucking a shotgun from the concrete door, he wrapped a hand around each barrel. He pulled. The two barrels tore up the length of the weapon. The men were only just becoming aware of what was happening when Chun's hands became sweeping blurs. The hunter with the bottle felt a tightness at his throat. He only realized that his shotgun had been knotted around his neck when he looked down and saw the stock jutting out beneath his chin. A single skeletal finger brushed the trigger.
My son, Grogbelly.
There was a guy in there, heading for the stairs after what?
Tense fingers groped the shotgun knot at the back of his neck.
Please, you can have the bottle. Just don't pull the trigger.
His plea fell on deaf ears. Chun was already gone. None of the hunters could say for certain where the old Asian went, but a few swore they saw a flash of silk kimono hurtling like a fired cannonball into the growing wall of orange flame. Remo jerked his head to one side. The gene-altering liquid splattered thickly to the dirty floor. The crazed geneticist's elbows were bent and jammed against his biceps, pinning him down. There was a surprising amount of weight to her. Without his hands free, Remo used the next best thing. As Judith repositioned her test tube, he bent his knees sharply, stabbing them up into her pelvis. The weight lifted. Judith flew off him, landing in a heap near the stairs. Remo completed the motion with his legs, slapping soles to the floor. Upright, he spun to Judith as she was scampering to her feet. Black smoke poured up around her. Flames licked at the wooden door casing. Framed in fire, Judith White was a hell-sent demon. Judith sensed the fire at her back. It clearly frightened her. Keeping her back to the walls, she moved quickly and cautiously away from the open flames. She stepped around Remo, leaving a wide space between them at all times.
You should have taken a sip, Brown Eyes. You could have been on the ground floor of the new era. You'd be one of the first successors to mankind.
Been there, done that.
What do you mean?
I met your predecessor, Sheila Feinberg, years ago. She tried using me like a scratching post, too.
For the first time, uncertainty clouded Judith White's features.
What happened?
I don't see old Sheila on stupid pet tricks, do you?
Judith had continued sidestepping in a wide arc around Remo. She was moving toward the riverside of the attic room.
She wasn't me.
Yeah, what happened to her was an accident. You deliberately did this to yourself.
Remo's eyes strayed over her shoulder. Apparently, the hunters hadn't been satisfied with simply setting fire to the front of the building. They had torched this rear section of the warehouse as well. Orange flames had just begun to peek up over the sills of the attic windows behind Judith. She didn't seem aware of the flames at her back.
Is this the point where you give me the big speech on the immorality of tampering with God's grand scheme?
No.
You've been a bad kitty. This is the point where I put you to sleep.
He'd had enough of Judith White's attacks. It was Remo's turn to act. She was still several yards away from the rear wall. Remo tensed his legs and sprang. He was off the floor in a shot, whirring like an airborne top. He chewed up distance faster than the animal eye could perceive. Only when his feet struck her solidly in the chest did she realize he'd even moved. By then, it was too late. Judith was thrown back by the force of the blow. She landed roughly against the wall, one elbow crashing through a filthy window pane. Flames instantly began licking up through the new hole. Judith jumped back from the fire, shocked.
Oh, Tigger doesn't like fire.
Flames erupted along the staircase wall. The wooden structure of the building was igniting like a struck match. Sections of brick wall began falling away, tumbling to the ground four stories below. And through it all, Remo stood, mocking her, mocking that which she had become. And in the primal heart of the animal that had once been Dr. Judith White, a rage as ancient as the oldest living beast exploded in violent fury. Careless, unthinking, propelled by hatred, she flew at Remo, face twisted with vicious passion. Hands flew up with blinding ferocity. She was no longer rational. She was a beast, lashing out in hate and fear and rage. Remo stood his ground, allowing her to fly to him. When she was close enough, he simply reached out and grabbed hold of one of her mauling raised arms. One foot shot into the air, bracing against her sternum. With a horrible twist and wrench, Remo ripped the arm from its socket. It tore free like an overcooked turkey leg. Shoulder bleeding, she swept the other hand toward him. Although Remo could have stopped the blow easily, he never got the chance. All at once, the floor buckled beneath them. The room suddenly listed like a boat caught in a gale. Remo kept his footing, but Judith was thrown from her feet. She fell to the angled floor, rolling down toward the far wall. When she struck the wall, dozens of bricks broke loose and tumbled out into wide open space. She pulled herself awkwardly to her feet. It was difficult to stand. Judith turned back to him. Remo realized what had happened. The ground floor had collapsed around the wooden columns that supported this section of the building. This wing of the warehouse was preparing to fall into the river. The heat from the fire grew in wicked intensity. Remo ignored him. Mindless of all but the creature before him, he began to advance on Judith White.
Remo!
The voice came from above, louder than the symphony of noise all around him. When he looked up, he saw the frantic face of the Master of Shinanju peering down through a wide hole in the ceiling. Flames curled around his tufts of smoke-tossed hair. Chun waved them away.
Hurry!
The flames were everywhere now. Wafting clouds of smoke partially blocked his view of the old Korean.
In a minute!
This building is collapsing! We must flee now!
Remo hesitated. He knew Chun was right, but he also wished to finish off Judith White once and for all. There would be no satisfaction in letting the fire do the work for him. She was watching him with her big cat's eyes. Judith hugged her knees close to her chest with her one good arm. Blood poured from the vacant socket of her other shoulder. In the end, good sense won out. Remo spun from the mad scientist. He left her cowering against the distant wall. With a leap, he made it up to the hole. Chun grabbed hold of him. Firm hands dragged him onto the roof. The coolness of the air outside shocked him. His body had compensated for the heat of the flames. The room had been like an inferno. Sweat beads evaporated from his skin. Remo paused at the top of the brick wall. When he looked back through the hole, he saw the rear of the building give way. The entire row of windows, the bricks, and Dr. Judith White tumbled out together. Moments later, they crashed into the rocks of the Chelsea Street Rapids.
This is no time for sightseeing. If you get injured again, you may tend to your own wounds.
Whirling, the old Asian bounded along the length of the brick wall, unmindful of the sheer drop to the woods below. Fire erupted through holes in the broad, flat roof. Remo raced after him to the main warehouse. As he sprang over the largest part of the building, The rest of the office wing behind him collapsed onto the floating figure of Dr. Judith White. Her battered carcass vanished beneath a ton of bricks and burning wood. Dr. Judith White's body turned up 5 days later.
It washed up on Deer Island. Her name tag from Boston Bio was in her pocket, as well as a few credit cards.
They're sure it's her?
Remo was sitting on the floor in his living room. The master of Shinanju sat on a simple reed mat across from him. Chun's parchments were laid out carefully at his knees. A quill danced in his bony hand as he sketched Korean characters.
The coroner says that her arm was wrenched off with what they are terming inhuman strength. I doubt it is necessary to go much further than that.
What about the other hand? Did you check fingerprints?
Unfortunately, Dr. White never had prints taken.
At a high-tech joint like Boston Bio?
It is not part of their normal procedure. And anyway, they did not regard her as a security risk.
What about dental records?
Her face was mangled in the fall. The teeth were shattered. What are you getting at, Remo? You do not believe she could have escaped.
I guess not, Smitty. It's just she was awfully resilient.
Not this resilient. The genetic formulas of Boston Bio died with her. The BGSBS material confiscated from Boston Bio that detailed the so-called Feinberg method has been destroyed. No one will be able to duplicate the formula. Nor, I suspect, will anyone want to.
Amen to that. What I can't figure out is why she was so fired up to help out humanity.
What do you mean?
That was the point of the whole BBQ project.
I didn't tell you.
Tell me what?
An autopsy was performed on one of the animals Dr. White brought back to Boston Bio. There was a deliberate destructive code buried in the DNA of the animals.
Are you saying the BBQs really would have killed people?
Across the room, Chun's head snapped up. Remo shot a glance at his teacher.
Worse. She heralded them as the cure for world hunger. However, that was not their only purpose. Dr. White's cure would have turned mankind into creatures like her. The genetic code contained in the animals was a variant of the old Feinberg bacteria formula. If consumed, the meat of the Bos Camelus whitus would have transformed people into things like her. If enough meat was eaten, the change over time would have been permanent.
So, we saved the human race one giant step back down the evolutionary ladder.
Remo trained one eye on the master of Shinanju. Finding nothing of interest in Smith's explanation, the old man had returned to his writing.
I had the remaining creature at Boston Bio destroyed. Since you eliminated the ones in the possession of Hita, every loose end should be tied up.
Me? I thought you did it.
Are you joking?
No. I told you where they were. I figured you'd take care of them. I said I wasn't going to kill them, Smitty.
Yes, but surely under the circumstances... It has been several days since you left Medford. With no one to take care of them, perhaps the animals have died already.
If you do send someone out there, you might want to check the tool shed in the barn.
Remo thought of Mona and Huey Janner.
And make sure they don't get within sniffing distance when they crack the door.
Why?
What's your problem?
Besides you?
Ha ha. You acted like you'd been gut stabbed when I said the BBQs could kill people.
A master of Shinanju cannot be stabbed. Oh, the clumsiest of us has been known on occasion to be mauled by feral kittens, as has been noted in the annals of the house. But stabbed? Never.
Judith White was no kitten, little father.
Perhaps.
Chun wrote for a few long minutes, Quill prancing merrily as his knotted hand traced perfect lines. Remo stared at the top of his bowed head the entire time. As the time wore on, Chun grew more annoyed. Though he tried to mask it, the quivering tufts of hair above his ears belied his increasing agitation.
You boxed one of them up and shipped it back to Shinanju somehow, didn't you?
The shock on Chun's face faded the instant he glanced up at Remo. He saw that his pupil was only guessing.
Pah, leave me. You're interrupting my train of thought. I was just at the point in the history where the kitten trapped the foolish assassin in a burning building.
Chun waved a dismissive hand. Remo got to his feet. He began walking slowly to the hall. In the doorway, he paused.
You know, Chun, between the BBQs and this mysterious movie deal of yours, you're building up a lot of secrets lately. You just better hope Smith doesn't find out.
Smith knows only that which I tell him.
If you say so, just don't say I didn't warn you.
Chun looked up in time to see his pupil leave the room. his aged face puckered in displeasure. Remo could be so irritating at times. The old Korean returned to his work. On the paper, he wrote the Korean symbol for ingrate. Although it wasn't much, the mark did help to ease a bit of his great burden of suffering, but only a bit. In a few short weeks, the gruesome murders in Boston passed into the realm of local folklore. Dr. Judith White joined the ranks of the Boston Strangler and Lizzie Borden as citizens of the Hub and surrounding Essex, Middlesex, and Norfolk counties vied to outdo one another over the backyard fence with tales of how they had almost encountered the killer doctor. Around the rest of the nation, things returned to normal. In a small room in a strip motel in rural North Dakota, away from all the idle gossip, a lone figure looked critically at herself in the long bathroom door mirror. She had requested the room farthest away from the office. It offered the kind of privacy she liked. She had ordered dinner not long before and didn't want to be disturbed while she was eating. The human predilection for rudeness was one of the things about them she most despised. Judith White examined the sprouting mound of pink flesh at her shoulder. At the moment, it was as large as a baby's arm and hand, but that would change quickly enough. She considered herself lucky to have had the foresight to include starfish DNA in her new genetic code. The sea creatures were able to regenerate parts that had been torn off. Now she could as well. Hers had been a daring plan, one that involved great personal risk. But it had worked. She hadn't been followed. The world thought that Dr. Judith White was dead. She would allow mankind that small luxury. For now. She flexed and opened the small hand. It was important for its growth that she exercise the new limb. How long it would take to mature, she had no clear idea. But so far, eating seemed to help its growth spurts. As she wiggled her tiny pink fingers, she heard a car slow down outside her motel room. Rapid feet ran across the gravel drive.
Pepe's Pizza!
Judith draped a robe over her shoulder, covering her tiny baby arm. Judith stepped from the bathroom. It was time for Judith White to feed, and she had no intention of having pizza for supper.
The Destroyer, Deadly Genes, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2001, Warren Murphy. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. With performances by Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Demery, James Lewis, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Barbara Pinellini, David Coyne, Dylan Lynch, James Konacek, M.B. Van Dorn, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Additional redshirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornette. Dialogue editing by Temeskin Wubna and Nathaniel Perry. Graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler, Temeskin Wubna, and Nathaniel Perry. The Destroyer theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Destroyer, be sure to look for our other exciting titles, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. And go to the Glorious House of Shinunju at www.warrenmurphy.com.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.